B-Pod Studios.
This is Talkin' Rock.
Talkin' Rock.
Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Well, as much as you might not think, this podcast has a little bit of a local feel as far as, well, artists from and around the Detroit area. John 5, of course, famously known for being from the east side of Detroit. And Tarik Jaffer from the band The Bluestones, just over the river there in Windsor, Ontario. So another guy who grew up listening to Detroit radio and influenced by Detroit rock and roll. We'll talk about that coming up with Tarik here in just a few minutes. But first, let's talk with John 5. John was in town over the weekend playing our WRIF Fest. You can check out all sorts of cool pictures and everything at WRIF.com. I'll throw that in the description as well. And John and Rob just work so well together on stage. John is one of my favorite guitar players. The guy is just insanely good. And his new record's coming out called Sinner on October the 29th. So a couple days right before Halloween. So this should be really cool. And he's got a couple guests we'll talk about coming up as well. And just a lot happening with John 5 as things kind of start to get back to normal. But yeah, I saw him over the weekend here at this show in Detroit. And it's truth. It is the truth. John 5 never, practically ever, walks around without his guitar. He's always got it strapped on. He's always doodling, always picking. He's just one of those guys. He's like a drummer that walks around with his drumsticks all day long. So anyways, we'll start off the podcast today with John 5 and get into Tarik coming up here in just a bit from the Bluestones. But first, it's 5.
How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Just kind of recovering from the weekend, I suppose. But you guys had a couple gigs this weekend, too, right here in Detroit and everything, huh?
Oh, my God. That, you know, listen, we always love coming to Detroit. I mean, of course, I love it, love it, love it. But so does Rob and the other guys. You know, we're always excited to come to Detroit because we know it's going to be a great gig. And it was. It was a phenomenal show. And everybody had a great time. The weather was really nice. And it was a blast, and we just love coming to, you know, I'm going to call it Pine Knob.
Right.
You know,
we
love coming to Pine Knob. It's just our home away from home, and it's just the people, everything. It was just so much fun.
Yeah, and you not only say it, but you also put your money where your mouth is because you guys have recorded live stuff there in the past.
Oh, absolutely. You know, not just Zombie, other you know, bands. You know, everybody records their stuff at Pine Knob because it's wonderful. You know, I was talking to Six right before we pulled into Pine Knob, and he was telling me all sorts of cool Pine Knob stories. Oh. You know, so it's wonderful. You know, it's just one of the great venues in the country, that's for sure.
So as I was watching the show the other day, I started to think about this. Does Rob Zombie give you guys in the band like your own, like, well, let's face it, I'll start by saying Rob Zombie is a mega rock star. I mean, he is just a rock star, right? But all you guys in the band have your own personality. So Rob just kind of lets you guys do what you want to do as far as personality and makeup and you know whatever you do on stage as far as revolving around your John 5 brand.
You know, everything, of course, everything is, you know, Rob will say, oh, he's cool with that or he's not cool with that. So we run everything by Rob. We don't just show up saying, here's what I'm going to wear. You know, we'll say, what do you think of this? Does this fit the vibe and all this stuff? So, yeah, he's, you know, we run everything by him and we just try to put on the best show that we can. Each one of us, Ginger, myself and Piggy D, and just try to have the crowd have a wonderful time, you know, and we have a great time up there. Like me and Rob joke all the time up there on stage and we're laughing and, you know, it's cool. And it's real. Like my sister who was at the show was going, what were you guys talking about? You know? And, because we were laughing and, because we were talking about something backstage you know, it really comes across too. And the crowd obviously picks up on it because even my sister picked up on it, that we were laughing, joking around and having a good time. And the crowd likes that too. Cause I remember seeing bands and they were having a good time and as a person that was, you know, went to a ton of shows, you know, that makes you feel good, too, that they're happy to be there and they're having a good time.
Well, the whole point of going to those shows is to, you know, forget about the rest of maybe your troubles and get away from the real world for a little while and have a good time. And it's like you said, if you see somebody else having a good time, it probably just rubs off organically.
Yes, absolutely. And listen, the same for us too, man. It gets us away from, you know, what's going on, and we're so appreciative to be playing shows and just to see the fans. You know, we miss the fans so much.
Well, I was going to talk about that because right after you guys played your first shows, I think it was mid-July in Grand Rapids, I texted you, how did it feel to be back on stage? Because you hadn't been on stage since, I'm thinking, February of 2020. So talk about that experience of going out there for the first time after literally not being able to.
Well, you know, it's funny because we would be like, we play these big shows and there's so many people. And then you get in an elevator with, you know, a couple people and you're like, oh boy, I don't know. This guy doesn't look good, or, you know, what's going on? And I better have my mask on and all that stuff. And then I was thinking, how are we going to get to these concerts where there's like, you know, 20,000 people there? How are we going to get to these concerts where there's, you know, 30,000 people? And I was look at those pictures and go, is this ever going to happen again? And so when we walked on that stage in Grand Rapids, it was emotional, you know, because I was so happy. I love people. Like, I love talking to people. I love talking to the fans. And I like to hear their stories. I know my stories. I, you know, all that stuff. But I like to hear, you know, people's stories. And I really missed people a lot. So when I got out there, it was emotional. It was an amazing feeling. And I'm just happy and honored to be playing shows again.
And tell me about the dichotomy of playing a show with Rob as opposed to playing your own solo shows. Now, obviously, there's the obvious thing with the solo shows are in smaller venues than that. But is there much of a difference between both the aspects of that?
You know, it's everything with Zombie. It's done. It's controlled. You know what's going to happen from this time to this time. Okay. You know exactly what's going to happen. But with my shows, we'll roll up and it will be a packed house and it'll be hot and sweaty. You never know what's going to happen. You don't know if someone's going to jump on stage. You don't know if, you know, if this person's going to freak out or that person. It's crazy, you know, because there's not a lot of security and it's wild, but I love it so much. Anytime I get a chance to play guitar for people and to make them happy, oh my God, it's just the best day for me. I mean, I love it so much. And let me tell you something, Meltdown. I was doing a show just, you know, a few weeks ago, and there was, this show was all ages, and there was this little kid and he was playing air guitar. He had to be 6 years old. And he had a John 5 mask on. And I'll probably never forget that my whole life, because he was so into it. And that I'll never forget, because it's those moments that are so important, because I was that kid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so imperative for people to have that excitement because so they can carry on what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, somebody asked me, I went to that Metallica drive-in movie thing last year, and I can't remember if I talked to you about this or not. I think it was Kevin Martin from Candlebox, I think I was talking to, and I told him that I went to this thing. And he said, how was it? And I said, you know what? It was cool, but it was outside of seeing Metallica on stage, which was filmed and taped and whatnot. It was cool just to be back in the midst of people of your same ilk, and they were there for the same reason. And that's why I think, you know, what you kind of missed a little bit from not being able to go to shows.
Absolutely. Again, I just miss people. I miss, you know, high-fiving. And when I did my tour, I was like, I want to do meet and greet. And because I wanted to talk to people.
Right.
You know? And it's different, you know, like, because I, you know, I like hearing people's stories. And I literally, people will come back and I'll say, oh, how did this go? And how did that go? And they'd be like, how did you even remember that? You know, but I just, for some reason, I really enjoy it. And I think I missed it more than anybody because I was pretty much the first one back out there. And because I was so excited, you know, I just really, I mean, if my cats heard me play one more song, they're going to jump out the window.
Yeah. So you talk about meet and greets and stuff. I don't know. Did you see any of the pictures? I know you're a big Kiss fan and you know those guys and stuff. But did you see the pictures of them standing behind the piece of plexiglass doing meet and greets?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean,
actually, yeah, you know, I think everyone's just trying to figure it out.
Right.
And that's what everyone's just trying to do. We're just all trying to figure it out, you know, and no one knows what's right, the right way to do it. We know what the wrong way to do is, but we're just trying to figure out the right way to do everything. And, 'cause I'm not the only one, you know, we all miss it and we all miss doing it. So, you know, we're just trying to figure it out. We'll get there. We're going to get there. We're almost there. You know, the glass is way, way, way half full for me.
I hope you're right, man. I'll tell you what, there was a lot of people there the other night. And, you know, hopefully everyone is safe and sound from that show. And, you know, but, you know, another thing about the Rob Zombie, you know, you talked about the record. We've talked about the record a bunch of times. So I got to bring this up because you started telling me this story the other night. And I'm like, this can't be for real. So you told me that you recorded all your parts in one day for the latest record, right? Which is fairly believable. And then you told me you didn't even know the songs going in. So you didn't know the songs going in and you recorded all the parts. And this record has so much flavor, like I was telling you. There's like 20 different guitar tones, you know, spread out throughout the entire record. So how does one go about doing that?
Well, here's the honest answer. Rob had his vocals, melodies completely finished. And with a basic track underneath, he calls me in and says, okay, let's do this. And then he will guide me. He will produce me. He'll say, give me a riff here. Give me this here. Give me that here. And then we work so well together. We work so well. And we just, you know, all these riffs. Give me something funkier. Give me this kind of style. And give me an acoustic breakdown here. Give me, you know, and then we'll just work so well together. And I concentrate so hard. Nothing. When I'm playing it, everything is blocked out and I'm just concentrating on my left hand, my right hand and tempo and playing it as perfect as possible. And it's a game that I play. And I, you know, we have our engineer there and we have looking at everything and I try to play it as perfect as possible.
And so so you went in there with a preconceived notion of what the stuff kind of sounded like and you had some ideas in your head?
Correct.
Okay. And I'm not a guitar player and it's always fascinating me. How do you get your guitar solos to not sound like the other guitar solos? How do you make them a little bit different?
Just different scales, different sounds, different modes, and different textures. So there's all sorts of things you can do to make it sound a little bit different from the others. And that goes back to me being a session guy from way back in the day. Hey, we need something that sounds like Dick Dale. Okay. We need something that sounds like Jimmy Page or something like that. And that really, you know, the knowledge is power. It's all education. And I try to learn. I mean, I'm playing right now. I was playing right before you called. And it's, you can never learn everything. But if someone calls something and they say, you know, I'm looking for this kind of vibe, boom, there you go. And there's tons of drummers like that too. They'll knock out a record in a day. Hmm. And it's wonderful, you know, just to, but you listen. I listen and you just try to play as perfect as possible.
Now, this might be an easy question for you to answer. Do you think the last Zombie record is his best?
In my eyes, I know every note and every lick of every Zombie record. By far, this one is my favorite. I can't speak for Rob, but when we open up with King Freak,
yeah.
and we do these songs. If I get excited playing these songs. I'm like, this is rad. And I was telling Rob, I was like, man, dude, it's so much fun playing these songs and they sound so good live, because they were all performed like I performed them like in a, from beginning to end, you know, I just tried to do it as a performance, and that's why they sound good live, because they're played as a performance.
Well, I got to,
I
was just going to say, I got to tell you, you really pumped up this record, and I think that it's definitely one of my favorites, for sure, one of my favorite solo records of his, without question.
Yeah, me too. I really love it a lot, and, you know, I want to play more songs from it. You know, I want to play Crow Killer, and I want to play Ghost Train and all these cool songs.
Yeah, Crow Killer, man, my God, what a great song that is. But well, let's look at some of your stuff here. You got Sinner coming out 2 days before Halloween, and you got all sorts of guests. I know you just talked with Steve Black about playing with Peter Chris and whatnot. And Carla Harvey, there's kind of that Detroit connection there. What does she bring to the table?
You know, I'm really close with Charlie from Anthrax, and
right.
Carla, you know, and I said, listen, I need someone to say this one word, and they need to deliver it like this and like this. And we tried it a bunch of times, and she nailed it, you know, and she's wonderful. And I'm super excited about, you know, my record, of course. I worked really, really, really hard on it. And the video's out, and the song, the first song, K Pasa, is out, and it's doing so well. And, you know, because, listen, it's a hard sell. It's guitar instrumental, you know?
Right.
But it doing so well makes me so proud and so happy. And because that's something you can't fake. You know, the fans either like it or they don't like it. And I'm just so thankful that they like it. And I don't have an ego like, well, they don't like it, too bad. I'm so happy they like it, you know, because I work so hard, and I just do it for the love of playing guitar and the love of making music, you know, and that's the only reason. If I'd be doing it, you know, just playing it for my cats, you know. And so when people really enjoy it, it makes me, it sends me over the moon.
And now you're on this new record label as well.
Yeah, and then now I'm signed to this major record label that has all these huge artists, and I'm like, how did this happen? You know, there's no vocals, it's just guitar playing, right? And they're like, we want to be in the John 5 business. And I was like, you know, I was in awe over that, you know? I mean, they've had everybody, Taylor Swift, and they've had, you know, that, like, Tim McGraw and all these huge artists. And I'm like, oh my God, you know, this is crazy.
Now, would you ever consider putting, I don't know, letting perhaps like doing like a thing like Slash did, where bringing a bunch of artists in to sing some of your songs?
Of course. I mean, geez, of course. They're going to have to write the lyrics, because all I would write about was, you know, monsters and guitars and
and cats.
Boobs and cats.
Boobs.
And all that stuff, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, of course, I would love to do that, you know, and I think, you know, I have a lot of friends, and I think that could be something, you know, in the future, who knows?
Yeah, that would be killer. So tell me a little bit more about this Sinner record. Is there a bunch of covers on this song as well, on this album?
There is, let's see, there's Crazy Little Thing Called Love,
right,
which is done in like a Chet Atkins style way.
Okay.
And it's really cool. Like, I'm so excited. Like, when I was playing, I played that a little bit and people went crazy for it. And then here's another cover that I don't think you will know, but this is how I do my records. You know, it's Les Paul and Mary Ford, a song called How High the Moon. And it's it's probably my favorite track on the record because it's done in that early 50s style of guitar playing. And it's completely insane. It's like so fun and completely out there. And then I have Georgia On My Mind.
Yeah.
Which Peter Criss is playing on. And the album goes from, like, you know, heavy, heavy stuff like Slipknot style to, you know, jazz and bluegrass or, you know, Metallica sounding stuff. So it's such a, just like all my records are, you know, you never will get tired of it because it takes you on such a musical journey. And that's how I've always been. I just love music. I love music. It just doesn't have to be a certain style. It's, well, just if it's good, I love it.
Yeah, that's the great thing about going to see your show, because like you said, it's like, you know, you're a guitar player doing instrumental stuff, but I've told you this before, your show is so cool because it's so different. Each song is different. Then, of course, you know, the medley at the end and stuff. And then when you start playing all the guitars and the fiddles and different things like that, there's always something really cool about your show that I don't know. I've seen other instrumentalists. It just doesn't strike me like that.
And I'm honest with myself. And I said to myself, well, you know, a lot of these guys are going to be bringing their wives and their girlfriends and kids, and I don't want them to get bored. So I'm going to, like, break out a mandolin, or I'm going to break out a banjo, or break out, you know, a guitar that glows in the dark, and, you know, all this stuff, and entertain people, because it doesn't matter if you hate the music, just to see something like that, you know, you'll be entertained. And that's all that I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to have a good time and have people have a good time. And, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, people want to go out and they want to, you know, be entertained and, you know, enjoy themselves. So, hey, a couple more things here for you, and we'll get you on your way here. First of all, you just mentioned Metallica. Now, they've been playing these surprise pop-up shows, and I know that you probably got a pretty good story or two. So what was the biggest small show you ever saw? And I think I know the answer, but what do you think?
Well, I saw AC/DC in Berlin in a small club, like in 2003 or something like that. I could be wrong on the year. Between 2001 and 2003, you know, I saw AC/DC warming up because they were going to go play with the Rolling Stones, and they just went into a club and played, and
wow,
it was crazy. Yeah.
And then, of course, I was going to say, you were at that KISS show at the Whiskey, right?
Oh, yeah. I was at the KISS show at the Whiskey. I've been at a Van Halen dress rehearsal where it was just me and one other person. I've been at, you know, a KISS rehearsal with all the original guys where it was just me sitting in front of the stage watching the band. It just, I was the only one.
It's moments like that when, like I'm always, like, astounded. It's like, don't they know I'm just a podunk country kid from Western New York? And you probably think the same thing when you're sitting there in front of your heroes. Like, don't they know I'm just a guy from Detroit?
Yeah, yeah. And it's so it's those special moments that you'll never forget. And that's, you know, and hopefully the audience, the crowd, the fans have that feeling too. Like, they'll, maybe we'll do a show and someone will remember it and it will influence some people, because that's so important too. You know, if I didn't get influenced back in the day, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now. So it's important.
Right. I was watching this Skinner documentary yesterday, and what are some of your favorite rock documentaries?
Boy, there's this one, by Radiohead, and I think it's called Meeting People is Easy or something like that. But it's a Radiohead documentary, and it was like wild, you know, it's like shows what really, really, really happens and what they have to do. There's a Nine Inch Nails one, back in the 90s. That was just like, whoa, you see that. And it really makes an impact on your life. And, but I love music documentaries, and the Skinner one's great. The Skinner one is wonderful. Talking with those guys, hearing those stories, those are all true stories. You know, Gary told me all those stories when I was working with those guys. I love music documentaries. They're like so inspiring. They're so inspiring, you know, and I'm, believe it or not, I'm doing a, well, they're not, I'm not doing it, but there's a company that's doing a documentary on me, and it's going to come out the, you know, next year, and everybody's in it, from Zombie and Halford and, you know, Michael Anthony and, you know, Peter Criss, and all these people are in it, and it's just a really cool documentary.
And final thing here for you, by the way, that'll be interesting because I'd love to hear what those guys have to say about, you know, a guy like you and your great playing and stuff. But you're such a great guitar player. I tell people all the time that you're, you know, one of my friends and one of my favorites to watch live. When was the last time you were, like, kind of blown away by a musician?
Oh, I look and get inspired all the time. But I will tell you, let's see, there is, oh boy, there's a player, and anybody who's listening to this can go on YouTube and check this out. His name is Joe Mathis, and there's a song you can put in, Pickin' and Grinnin', and you can see it on YouTube. It's in black and white. It's from the 50s, and anybody that looks this up will know exactly what I'm talking about. It is the most insane thing you'll ever see.
All right. I'll have to look this up. Yeah, there it is. Okay, yeah.
Joe Mathis, Pickin' and Singin'. And it's not long. Just watch it, and you will know exactly what I'm talking about at the end of it. You'll be like, yep, that's crazy.
All right, five. Hey, by the way, what's with the number five? I don't know if I ever asked you about this.
Well, when I joined Marilyn Manson, he said, okay, your name's going to be John Five.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to do everything with numbers. And I was like, okay, you know, and I remember going home that day and practicing my autograph and all that stuff. And, you know, I kept it and, you know, kept it for all these years. So it's worked out well. I think a lot more people know me as John Five than John Lowry.
Right. And what's with the LA Rats? Are you guys, what's the future of that band hold for you?
I don't know, but it's funny you ask because I have my LA Rats shirt on right now.
I got to get one.
Oh, my God. It's super cool. So I don't know. Hopefully we do something. Everybody's doing their thing, but I always got a guitar in my hands. I'm always ready to go.
Yep, armed and ready for sure. So, well, listen, Five, thanks so much, as always, for the time. Sinner comes out October 29th. Really great to see you. And, of course, your sister and brother-in-law and your lovely wife over the weekend and stuff. It's always fun, and you're always so so accommodating and hospitable. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you. And it's always great to see you. And, you know, I'm looking forward to hanging out soon.
John Five today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. And yes, enough words can't be said about what a great picker that guy is. Of course, the fiddle player extraordinaire, John Five, today on Talkin' Rock. October 29th, Sinner, and definitely looking forward to that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Up next, it's Tarik Jaffer from the Bluestones. And their new record's called Hidden Gems, and they've got a tour that they're just embarking on right now. So he decided to call in and let us know what's happening with the Bluestones. Tarik, how's things?
It's pretty well, actually. We're just rehearsing, looking forward to this upcoming tour, feeling pretty good.
Now, your tour, the whole thing starts in Cincinnati, of course, going to be here in Detroit coming up in a couple days as well at the L Club. We'll talk about that in a second. But first of all, being a Canadian band, what is the deal with you guys coming over to the United States, or how is this whole thing working in a time of the pandemic?
Yeah, it's you know, it's a little bit more, I guess, strict. As long as you have all your paperwork in order, you're good. I mean, both myself and Justin were vaccinated. That kind of makes things a little bit easier when it comes to border crossings. But, yeah, as far as, like, the border stuff, they just just got to be prepared, man. That's all. Just have all the paperwork you need for your visas and whatnot, and you're good to go.
Yeah, I was super fired up when they said that they were going to, you know, kind of open up Canada again if you're vaccinated, right? And I'm thinking, okay, cool. I can go back over to Canada and see my friends over there because I like to ride my motorcycle and do different things over there in Canada.
Yeah.
Right. And then it's like, well, yeah, you got to show proof of vaccination, and then you got to sing with a toque on your head. Then you got to sing their national, the Canadian national anthem. Then you got to, read Neil Peart's book. It's like there's all these things that's going on. I don't know what's happening with that.
Yeah. They keep adding more things to the list as well. I know chugging a full 2-6 of maple syrup is on there now, too. So.
All right, well, I can handle that one. So, okay, perfect. So, when you guys go back to Canada, do you have to quarantine? Let's say you're going to go back tomorrow. Do you have to quarantine?
No. So, we're vaccinated, so we don't have to quarantine.
Gotcha.
Just pop in there. We do have to show a negative COVID test, and I think as long as that's good, then we can go out and be free. I mean, this is as far as I know. I mean, I could be sorely mistaken, and if so, I guess I'll find out in a month.
Now, of course, you guys are from the Windsor area. Did Detroit and the Detroit music scene or Detroit radio or anything like that have any influence on you growing up on your music?
Oh, yeah, like hugely. You know, I mean, all of our radio stations were Detroit. I mean, especially our, you know, obviously the Riff, you know, it's something we listened to for a very long time. And it was just a lot of American rock and American music that we would build our influence on, you know. And being in Windsor, I do feel like we feel a lot more American than we do Canadian just because how close we are to you guys in Detroit. So it's definitely made its mark on us for sure.
Well, I've said this before. When you go over into Windsor, it's like going into another country.
It is like that.
No, it's like that. No, but seriously, for those that don't know, it's like Windsor's beautiful. I mean, you know, there's some really, really nice areas of Windsor right across the, especially along the riverfront there by the casino and everything, and going north from there. But no, it's cool, and I have a lot of friends over there, obviously. But what is success? I've asked bunches of bands in my life about this, but what does success in America mean to a band like you guys?
It's like the pinnacle for us, you know? I mean, especially looking up to all these American musicians and entertainers. I mean, that would be for us, like, to be successful in America is like that. That's when people talk about making it for us. It's that, you know? And obviously we appreciate the support of our own country and we tour our own country frequently, but to have success in the U.S. is just to have success, period, I think. And it's something that we keep working towards.
Now, looking at it from an American perspective, I find that Canadians are very patriotic and Canadians are very much all about their Canadian counterparts. So it's like, you know, you're just talking about, you know, making it over here in the United States. But yeah, but you, like you said, there's a big part of you that, you know, really wants to be accepted in Canada. You know, there's bands like, for example, the Tragically Hip and stuff. Obviously, you know, legends in Canada never really translated over here.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's funny. It's something that like Canadian musicians talk about all the time is like, what is that sort of, there's the real border. And then there's also this imaginary border between Canadian music and American music. We've been kind of lucky enough to ride the line a little bit and found most of our success in the U.S. I mean, it's funny, for the longest time, other than our hometown of Windsor, which we love dearly, we found that we were more like Canada's rejects. Like the U.S. took us on a lot faster and a lot quicker than Canada did. And it wasn't until, you know, a couple years of success mild independent success in the U.S. that Canada caught on. They're like, oh no, these are our guys now, you know, like they're from our country. But really we do owe it to the States, man. I mean, it's where we found a lot of our early success and continue to find more and more fans.
And when do you guys decide, there's been like kind of in the last 10 years, especially like this, just rash of two piece bands. When do you guys form your band and decide, you know what, we don't need anybody else?
It's funny. It's not like a conscious decision. It just sort of like happens that way. You know, it's over years and years you play together. Everything sounds fine. It sounds good. You get compliments about how big the sound is. We just never really had a reason to find anybody. And also, it was just so easy to tour with two guys in the band. You know, it just makes everything so much more simple.
Yeah,
so,
I always wonder, with Slipknot and stuff, it's like, how do they pay these guys, first of all?
Arcade Fire, you got like 16 people running around on
stage. Yeah.
It's something that we've never had to deal with. And Not to say that we're against adding members. Of course, if it added to the music and added to the live show, we would. But for now, I mean, we're sitting pretty, man.
Now, I saw the guys from Royal Blood open up for Foo Fighters back 6 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I was, like, just blown away by how much noise comes off that stage from those two guys. To bands like, you look up to bands like that, like, you know, Black Keys. I mean, obviously, White Stripes from here.
Yeah, I mean, White Stripes big time, obviously, Detroit band. Jack White himself as well was big on our early influence, as well as the Black Keys. You know, it's something that we would listen to frequently. But yeah, Royal Blood is definitely an example of one of those modern day duos that's really doing it well and putting out some good music. So we definitely do look up towards those guys. I mean, that's kind of the position that we'd like to be in. They're making, you know, new rock music that people are really consuming and enjoying, and that's kind of what we want to do as well.
And of course, you dropped your latest record, Hidden Gems, this year. And first of all, did you see the movie?
the movie, yeah. Are you talking Uncut Gems?
Oh, Uncut Gems. That's right. Yeah. That was actually pretty good. Yeah, wasn't too bad.
See it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Uncut Gems. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you got me.
Actually, it was one of those movies I felt stressed the whole time.
It's a very anxious movie to watch. You're right.
Oh my gosh, I was so stressed out.
Yeah, no, you're right. So yeah, we could talk about movies. Like, for example, like, what's the best Rush Hour movie?
Rush Hour 2. I mean, that's an easy answer for me.
I saw that on your Facebook. I'm just goofing on you.
Oh, you did your research.
I did a little bit. So, but no, Uncut Gems. So, talk about the latest record and like what you guys set out to what you guys set out to do on this album.
Yeah, it was the first album that we had done with a producer who was also an idol of ours. His name is Paul Meany. He was in a band called Mute Math and went on to just be a badass producer, producing anybody from the likes of even 21 Pilots. So like, it was just an honor to work with this dude that's been an idol of ours for so long. He took a liking to the demos early on, and we just wanted to put together an album that was representative of where we were in the music industry and where our sound was. I mean, our debut album we put out a few years ago, that was kind of our first entrance onto the rock scene. And we felt that Hidden Gems was a more refined rock record as we were a more refined rock band, you know, over the years. And it was just kind of a great snapshot of who we are as musicians and as people, this past year. It was a little tricky to put it out during a global pandemic. I will say that, but eventually we couldn't wait any longer. We wanted to put these songs out into the world. We love them so much. And now finally able to tour the record that we released so long ago, is a blessing for sure.
No, you just hit on it too. You said you couldn't wait any longer. It's like, I've talked to several bands that dropped new music during the pandemic, and a lot of them, you know, kind of struggled with it. Some of them are like, no, we're just putting this out there. And some of them, you know, did wait a little while. And finally they're like, just like you said, you can't wait any longer. It's like, you got this stuff. You don't want it to become, would you think it would become dated in your own catalog if you just sat on it for another year?
I don't know. It's kind of like, what else do you do? You know, you either, you sit and wait for the perfect time to release it, or you release it, and even if you have to tour 5 or 6 months later, it's not like those songs are old on stage. They're going to be brand new to everybody who is going to see them. You know, like this tour that we're embarking on, like these are all new songs, and regardless of when we release that album, it's a new song to the person watching it, which is something that we started to really sort of believe and buy into. So we said, let's do it, man. Let's not sit on these any longer. Let's put this out, because what's the point?
Mm-hmm. And of course, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, you'd be playing the L Club in Detroit. Have you been to that place yet?
Never. I've never been there.
I've only been there once, and it was so cool, and you'll appreciate this. I got to host an evening with Tom Morello one night there.
No kidding. That's so cool. That is really awesome.
It was awesome. It was like, Tom Morello, this is your life. And I kind of went through this, not a script, but kind of like a, they kind of gave me a loose script as to what to follow so I could show the pictures behind us. And it was so cool. And he would go up and jam and stuff like that. So, yeah, it was really cool.
That's so cool, man. That's a really fun kind of interview to do.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I was on stage with him for about an hour and a half, and it was really, really cool. But anyways, last thing here for you. You know, you got your tour now here in the States, but I've never understood this. You're doing exactly the opposite of what I would do. You're touring Canada in February?
I know. Can I explain it? No,
sure.
I cannot explain
no,
it.
You can't, okay.
But it's happening. You're absolutely right. It's happening. Canada in February and then Europe in March to follow. But, yeah, that's going to be a cold, cold tour.
Oh, my God. You know, I said to James, James Hetfield from Metallica one time, they played here in January. I'm like, dude, why are you playing here in January? It's like people don't go outside in Detroit. I'm like, no, it was freezing balls that day, too. And people have to stand outside and wait to get in and the whole thing, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess if anything, it just, we'll have to heat it up ourselves, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's like, well, that's a good spirit going into that tour right there. So,
yeah.
All right, man. Well, listen, thanks so much for your time and good luck on this tour and have fun at the Elk Club here in Detroit. And I got to go see you guys in Windsor sometime. If I ever get over there, I got to learn how to drink my maple syrup and
there you go.
Rehearse my Rush lyrics. So
there you go. You get those down, you won't have any issues.
All right, my friend. Thanks so much for the time.
All right. Have a good one.
And there you have it. Two artists with, a Motor City connection. One that grew up in the Motor City and one that grew up right across the river and was influenced by Motor City Rock and Roll and Motor City Radio and all sorts of things Detroit. So, hey, thanks so much for checking out the podcast. Man, we're really cranking out with some interviews. I got some other ones in the works. Some more hooks in the water, as they say, as I've said before in the past, actually, with different artists coming up. But, if you get a chance to see John 5, I've never seen the Bluestones, by the way. I should probably go check out that show. That's tomorrow as I record this. But, two-piece band, really killer sound, too. I love those guys. But anyways, John 5, if he's playing anywhere near you, whether it be with Rob Zombie or solo, definitely go see him. He's so good, man. It's really unbelievable. Anyways, hey, hit me up on the socials if you get a chance. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, at MeltdownWRIF, and on the Instagram, at WRIFMeltdown. So if you're out there doing the socials thing, by all means, hit me up. Let me know what you listen to the program, and we'll give you a follow back as well.
Thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown. You can help this podcast grow by giving it a 5-star rating and writing a review on Apple and iTunes. Plus, feel free to subscribe and share it with your friends. Until next time, thanks for listening to Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.